podcast for Transcending Times, and I've got a very special guest today. We're going to be delving in some really deep subjects, mind control, occulted subjects as well. One which is really pressing, certainly on my radar at the moment, and I know my guest feels exactly the same. He's got a website that he's just designed, Waking World, waking.world, which has loads of great information on there about the problems and the solutions that we face today. And he's Dale Penny. Are you there, Dale?
Yes, thank you, Tony. That was very nice of you.
No, that's all right. Yeah, you've got to start with a positive introduction, right?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
So how are things where you are down in Australia at the moment?
43 degrees Celsius today.
Oh,
so
really?
Just sort of in a house with air conditioning or a car with air conditioning and doing anything outside is awful.
Wow. Is it nice and Orwellian there right now?
Yeah. Well, it is. It's part of the Commonwealth, so we're all part of the same old problem.
Yeah. And so what happened with the vaccine thing in the end? Is that now in enforcement down there?
Yeah. Well, that was the last Prime Minister that put that in. So that was the you know, you weren't going to get any government handouts if your kids didn't get vaccinated, etc.
Right.
Fucking, you know, yeah. Ridiculous, really. But yeah, so that went in probably, I don't know, a year ago. A year and a half ago, I guess.
Was there much resistance to that? Because, I mean, you see stuff online, but, you know, as you know, it's like there seems to be the same handful of people on Facebook that kind of know each other from around the world, and it's difficult to gauge what's actually happening.
What's really happening. Yeah. I'm the same, Tony, because I'm not looking at... I'm spending very little time engaging with sort of mainstream people, to be honest, because it just does my head in.
So I
tend to I can't get myself into, you know, I have to be very careful. I think I've got quite good now. I have to be very careful on Facebook because the ego can run rampant. So I'm now finding it quite easy to engage with people without getting emotionally attached to the conversation. Mm-hmm. But I try to avoid conversations about vaccines because it just riles me, having an autistic child and not really knowing what the cause of that was.
Right, I see.
I mean, obviously you would know what my position on it is.
Yeah,
but yeah, you know, there's lots of good slash normal friends in speech marks that don't see any problem with vaccinations at all. So I just you can't really go down that.
Yeah,
you can't go down that route with people you know well. That's the problem.
It's a sensitive subject, that's for sure. And so are you finding just in general, are you finding people a little bit more open-minded to things lately?
I think I can see a significant change in the amount of people that are just aware of things in general, whether that's vaccinations, whether that's government control and manipulation, whether it's, you know, money creation, tax theft, whatever it is. You might run into, you know, you might be in Harvey Norman, which is a local shop here, and you know, you just happen to drop something into the dude that you're buying something off of at the desk, and he'll say something and you realize that he's on the same wavelength, you know, or the guy that cuts my hair, or yeah, so suddenly there's all these people that seem to be popping up, and they're actually the people who you least think are the ones who are actually starting to think, starting to see things the way that they are.
Yeah, certainly.
I don't know whether I'm attracting those types of people now, because that's just what I'm, you know, I guess what I want. But
yeah,
I think it's changing.
Yeah, I find the same. I think people are becoming a little bit more open. Like you say, sometimes you know, I get messages or comments from people you just wouldn't expect at all. I mean, even members of my family are starting to ask about detox and stuff. It's like, wow, yeah, you know. So, I think times are changing, and I think it's slowly coming around. But we just need to keep sort of grinding away, I guess.
Yeah, as I've mentioned before, it's the thing is, I think there's lots of pockets of people, probably like me, like you, and you've obviously got a pretty big following of people, but there's little pockets of people that are all trying to do things, and it's like little knee-jerk reactions a lot of the time to try and get to try and change a vast system. But it's got to be a long process, because the systems that we're in have spent, you know, centuries being implemented. I don't know how many centuries, but been, you know, centuries getting implemented. We're not going to fix it overnight. So it's, you know, we've got to play that same long game, and that long game is in just trying to slowly wake people up, without getting cross, without getting frustrated, because I don't think it's going to happen overnight. And I used to think I'd be lovely if I could see it happen in my lifetime, but if I can educate my daughter, and you know, maybe she has to educate her daughter, and eventually it changes. I mean, that would be it, if it could be a quick fix, that'd be great, but I don't know whether it will be, because I don't know whether people are seeing it quickly enough. That's the frustration for me, but you have to not be frustrated about it.
Yeah, I concur with that totally. Although sometimes I do have visions of this whole thing being like a dam, and once it breaks, it's like the waters go everywhere, and the selfish part of me would like to see something happen sooner, but I guess
so. And so would I. I'd love to. The thing is, the exponential growth, like when you look at all we have to do, each person is affect two people, and it only takes 30 layers of that to reach the whole world. Like 30 layers, that's not much. But the problem is, you're dealing with, you know, for example, the website I've got, you know, I've just put that together because I quite enjoy doing it, to be honest. I do, you know, a bit of web design as a bit of a hobby, and it was just kind of fun to do, and it's the topics that I'm interested in. But there's a mechanism there that could get people, you know, it could spread. But the problem is, you're still dealing with, you know, egos with people, where it's not their idea, so why do they really want to help, or do they trust me, or do they think I'm just doing it because I want to get lots of users and then sell it, which I never would. If anyone who knows me would know that not be the case. But that, just taking my thing as an example, it's very hard. So you just think, you know, come on, if we're all in this together, we should all be trying to use whatever platform we can use, not one that's owned by the CIA or by some government agency, yeah, or whatever. I mean, we should all be trying to use a platform in order to make it spread and help each other spread it. But yeah, we're dealing absolutely with that, but the ego is the egos don't let that happen, unfortunately. Yet.
Yeah, it's a shame. I mean, you're right about things like Facebook. I mean, it's so frustrating, the levels of censorship on there. I mean, it's barely, for me at the moment, it's hardly worth posting anything, because it's just a joke. And it would be nice if we could all... The problem is, I guess, most of the people that we want to reach are on Facebook. So I think that's my problem. But then if your posts are not getting out anyway, what's the point? So I'm trying to do a lot more face-to-face interactions, and I speak to my
live
students.
Feeds and stuff
my
well.
Students,
which
is pretty good. But that's great. So what we're going to get into a big bugbear of mine at the moment. We were just talking off air about this before, but for me, more and more, the way I see the world is, we're under mind control. There are many different forms of mind control. And this one for me is one of the biggest, which is religion. You know, billions and billions of people. I think you sent me, I don't know whether it was you sent me the figure, 4.6 billion people are into religion. I mean,
no, that's 4 point something billion is just the Abrahamic faith, that being Islam, Judaism, Christianity. So it doesn't include Hinduism, Buddhism,
wow,
you know, any of those other bits and bobs.
Wow.
Well, so,
yeah. Well, I think define. I mean, I'm of the opinion like you. Religion has many truths in it. It's all been, you know, there. A lot of them are allegories, or they've been completely hijacked. But you'll go into that shortly. But I think it's important to sort of point out that, you know, religion is kind of holding us back consciously. The actual word religion in Latin translates to relegare, which means to thwart or to tie back.
Yeah.
So everyone's consciousness is being held back individually and collectively. This is why, when, for me, you know, religious people will say, I get messages, look, you know, I like what you do, but just leave religion out of it, or, you know, well, no, because religion is holding our collective consciousness back. So that's my view on it, but you yep. have the floor, mate. You explain what your findings are and what you feel are the truths in it, and you know, what we should be yeah. keeping away from.
Well, and obviously the three things you're not supposed to talk about are money, religion, and politics, and that's supposed to be because, you know, it's private, or, you know, it can be a disruptive topic. But probably the reality is because they don't want you to dig too far because of what you'll actually find out. So the thing is, right, what I find is that there's a difference between, if you take the Bible as an example, and I have to take that, and I've done this on my little video things that I've done, right? But if you take the Bible as an example, and I've brought up Christian, so I understand a fair few of those stories, it's not the Bible that is the problem, it's the religion, and the religion is the interpretation. So if you were taking the Bible, which is used as the basis of Judaism, Christianity, and Islam, you know, it's all that is the basis of those three religions. So one book is the basis of three religions. So therefore, a religion is an interpretation of a particular holy book. That's my view of it. It doesn't mean that the book's wrong. It means that whoever's jumped on the bandwagon of a particular interpretation is potentially wrong. So if you, and this is probably where I'm going to gabble and go all over the place.
No, right? Mate, you do what you say, what you need to say.
But why are people religious? What's the purpose of it? Well, the whole purpose of religion is that you're supposed to be connecting with some form of godly force. Are you, like, you're not an atheist, are you? You still believe there's a yeah, okay. Yeah. So therefore the fundamentals of religion should be around making us a better species, learning how to interact with each other with love and kindness and compassion and peace and tolerance and all that sort of thing. And when religions were created, they were created in different parts of the world. So whoever wrote the book maybe wasn't anticipating everyone all getting together and discussing the different ideas, because essentially when you get down to the core of it, all of those ideas, when you scale back all the story, all of the actual inner points about how you're supposed to be living your life are actually the same. It's just all kind of built into a big story, or whether, you know, so whether or not those stories are real events, people, places, etc. And it's very hard, I think historically, I don't even know whether evidence has been put forward to actually be able to prove that many of the things happened, or any of the things happened in the Bible as it says that they happened. So whether or not the religion is a good or a bad thing is completely separate to whether the Bible is. So the Bible, I believe, is a good thing, because from what I can understand, the message that you get out of the Bible is it's basically an instruction manual telling you how to live your life and how to engage with the world around you in order that you can interact with, yeah, so if you live your life a certain way, then you can interact with this godness, the force that is whatever God is, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. So whenever you know, you get cross with, oh, religion's getting on my tits, can I use bad language? I do tend
yeah,
to use
yeah, it's okay, mate. This is one of my podcasts, so I think you'll be all right.
So religion gets on your tits, but the reality is, you should really be looking at the interpretation that these people have got of the book. And you're not going to change the world if you get cross with 4.4 billion people that are just looking at the Bible as an example. If we just get cross with them, all that's going to do is make those people go, oh, well, I'm not even going to listen to anyone. So therefore, surely we need 4.4 billion people to be part of a movement that's going to change the world. So we need them to look at things and go, okay, well, maybe am I interpreting things maybe incorrectly, and putting the alternative opinion in front of them. And I'm not saying I'm right, and I'm not saying the people that I listen to are right, but the what you get out of the interpretation that I have is a peaceful life. And when I look at Christians, if I look at, you know, they're all trying to drill home, I'm right, you know, if the Muslim's incorrect, that, you know, the God of Islam is, you know, Allah is a bad God, and, you know, we're Christian and we follow Jesus, and Jesus said he was the only way, so therefore our way's right and everyone else's way is wrong. It's like, no, we're all the same. And if you've got that mentality, then you've completely misinterpreted what the teachings of the man that was Jesus was actually saying. And if you've completely misinterpreted that, you can't call yourself Christian.
Sure. Just to interject there quickly, I think, yeah, if you could get through in a more peaceful way, it would obviously be ideal. But what I've found is that many people are willing to consider most things, consider their opinion on most things, whether that be eating meat or whether that be their belief in authority, but try getting someone who's religious to question, and it's a completely different ball game. And I've had many gentle conversations and more maybe say more lively interactions with religious people, and they are just so adamant. I really think that there is something within, maybe it's because they have it's been forced upon them many times from a young age, you know, it's so ingrained with them so deeply.
Absolutely.
So I don't really know what the answer is to actually even engage conversation with many religious people.
Well, but I still think that if you have enough information and evidence that you understand what it is that they follow, then I feel like I can have an educated conversation with a Christian, because I was brought up Christian. I went to church. I would have considered myself a Christian, so I would have considered myself religious. Mm-hmm. But now, having then read the Bible again with a new open mind, and having read it concurrently with, you know, some of this esoteric teaching, I now feel like I can go back and have a conversation with someone. And you're right, because to start with, they get the asshole. Like, they'll be really, and it's arrogance, and it fires you up, and it makes you really want to fucking unload. But the whole purpose of what you're doing is you're trying to communicate what the message is that if you take Jesus, what the message was that Jesus was saying, that is, you know, you're mm-hmm. supposed to be kind and tolerant and peaceful. Therefore, you can't let yourself get fired up when you're having the mm-hmm. conversation. So it's just about trying to introduce those things to them, and just whether you just drop it, it's like with anything. You drop a little seed in, and you just get them thinking. And, you know, so they might go to church every Sunday, and if they sit there thinking, okay, well, you know, the story of, you know, Noah's Ark, I believed, you know, that they would be thinking, well, I believe, you know, the story of Noah's Ark was, you know, dude got went into a boat with two of every single animal on the planet, blah 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 blah, and, you know, that ark has, you know, might have been found on a mountain somewhere near by archaeologists and all that other, you know, what I believe is nonsense.
Yeah.
But it might have happened, and you've got to say, well, maybe the real event did happen, and I can't prove that it did or it didn't happen. But that event is irrelevant, because what the story is actually telling you is that, and it's a mystical story, is that it's all, that story of Noah is all about what's going on in your head, the reader's mm-hmm. head. And that is, you know, the water represents the psyche and the mind, and the tumultuous nature of, you know, a stormy mind, and, you know, how a mind can bring you down, and how if you have a refuge where you can access the godness, so that mm-hmm. might be, you know, stillness in meditation, or, you know, whether if your mind is, you know, worrying, oh, how am I going to pay the bill for so and so next month, or this person's got on my nerves, and, you know, da da da, if you quieten all of those thoughts, mm-hmm. then that's when you find the peace, and that's when your life becomes better. So that's the, you know, so the story of Noah, it doesn't matter if it's real or not, because I don't get anything out of it. I, the reader, get nothing out of the story other than a story that says, oh, you know, well, if you trust in God, the man up in the clouds with the beard and the moustache, if you trust in God, then everything will be all right. Well, that's a nice story, but what scientifically it's telling me is you've got to look inside your brain and see how your mind's working. And if you can get a grip of your mind and your emotions, that's when you'll start to find peace in your life. That's the whole purpose of it. So if you can drop that little seed into someone who's going to church, on a Sunday and they go, oh yeah, actually, you know what, all these things that I heard are possibles, you find that when you hear the stories that are in the Bible, it's very hard to refute that possibility because it all matches up perfectly. And that's what I was saying, you know, when we were first, you know, Skype messaging about potential topic, where you're saying, oh, you know, maybe you could do something on astrotheology, or so there's all these different lines, interpretations that you can take out of the Bible. There's astrotheology, which means it's all, obviously it's all aligning with, you know, the movement of celestial bodies and the zodiac and all that sort of stuff, because that whole interpretation fits perfectly into the narrative of the Bible and the way that the journey that the story takes through the Bible. So that's just one part of it. And then if you look at the psychological part, and maybe the sort of anatomical part, where it's all about how your brain functions, how you're supposed to match your brain and your heart, you know, the physical makeup of your brain with your 12 whatever something or other nerves, which are supposed to be the 12, you know, there's all these different interpretations, but they all fit perfectly. So even if you give someone a seed of information and they sit in a church and listen to a literal story, they listen to the whole and they think, oh geez, actually whatever Dale said actually fits perfectly into all of those different places. So that's what you got to do. Just, my view is, you know, have nice conversations with people, but I think you need to be informed. You need to, you know, that's, and I just find the stuff, I find all this information fascinating, which is why I research it. But the Bible is, Bible's a fucking big book, so you know, I'm certainly not an expert on it.
I mean, when you explain it like that, I mean, I'm of the opinion that it talks about our consciousness. You know, Jesus Christ represents the Christ consciousness when we align, align with truth and balance the left and right brain hemispheres.
Correct.
So,
exactly.
But there's also that mental side of it, which you explain, which is actually new to me. So, when you actually break it down, they're actually quite genius, the books, aren't they? Because
This is the thing. Yes, they are. It's written by a higher intelligence, not necessarily a God thing, but it's either written by someone who was far more intelligent than whoever was around at the time. But there's so much more to it, which is why it's such a I've cut in here, and these books. So for instance, I have the Jehovah's Witnesses come round. They haven't been around for a while, but they used to come round every other Thursday, and they'd come into the house because I'm interested to know what do they think. And all they'll ever do is give me the literal interpretation. But they're lovely people. Yeah. They're lovely people. And they've got the right... They want me to see their side of it so that I can be saved and, you know, go and live, you know, with Jesus when he comes back and all that. So, and that's not... And they're lovely people. Uh-huh. But it's a literal interpretation. And I say to them, surely if you believe that the book has been written by God, isn't it going to be a little bit more to it than just a literal fancy story about boats and water and stuff? Wouldn't there be more to it? And then, oh, and after that day, I think you're digging a bit too deep. And I'm like, well, why do you want to keep coming around to my house and having Bible studies with me if you don't want to hear a different interpretation?
Yeah.
So it's a really complex book, and when you they're all very complex and very, very clever books, and when you look at it, it's like I'm waffling here, but my mother, who's very Christian, she doesn't really want to hear any of this. It's very hard for me to tell her any of this stuff because, you know, she's in her 70s. Let's say she's got 20 years to live. You know, she's worried that what she's going to hear is going to disrupt the belief that she's had since a child. But yet, when you try to get her to explain things to you from a Christian perspective, she can't do it because it doesn't make sense. You know, she can't explain what the Holy Trinity means. She can't explain what everlasting life is. She can't explain what the second coming of God, all those things, because it's just, oh well, I don't ask too many questions. I just kind of, you know, I believe if I made my peace with God and I love Jesus, I'm going to go to heaven. And I'm like, well, that's cool, and you will, but aren't you interested in finding out a bit more? Mm-hmm. And I said to my wife in the car the other day, I said, it's like, it's really frustrating because it's like my mum, if you, this is a, I guess a bit of a and not an allegory. I was trying to explain it to my wife what I meant. It's like my mum and dad think that they're going to Barbados every time they go on holiday. They're going to Barbados, and they keep saying, "Oh, you know, we go this way, and we get on the plane, and we go to Barbados, and you know, we sit on the beach, and it's lovely, you know, da 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 da." And then eventually, I come with them, and I said, "Well, you're not going to Barbados. You keep getting on the plane. You're going to just, you know, Etalong Beach on the central coast in Australia. It's not that nice. You know, there is a Barbados. It's over there. But you're so convinced that you're going to this particular place, but you're not, because you're missing the point. So don't you want to at least see that there's another route that will take you somewhere, and the visibility you're going to have is much better?" I don't know if that kind of makes much
sense.
Yeah, but
absolutely.
It's like it's like a Christian only thinks that, you know, because they're interpreting things in a Bible, they're interpreting words one way and they can be interpreted another way. If Jesus said, "I am the way," so therefore every Christian says, well, if it's a Muslim, although Muslims do believe that Jesus was a prophet, but you know, okay, it's a Jew, well, they don't believe in Jesus, they're not going Jesus's way, so therefore they're not doing it right and our way is the only way. It's like, no, it's a direction, and mm-hmm. the man Jesus said you've got to follow this direction in order to get to this end point.
Yeah.
But there's another religion over here that's saying, yes, you've got to follow this direction, it just so happens that there's another, you know, there's a guy called Vishnu that might be leading it, or a guy called, I don't know, whatever the other special people are, that are leading people down the same fucking route. So don't discount them, because they're all thinking, scale the fucking stories back and you'll see that it's all the same.
Yeah.
Oh God, it's so frustrating.
I know. I can relate. but you're a lot more eloquent than me in how you describe it. I mean, I just think you know, the root of the problem is very simple when it comes to religion. From what I can see, is that people are taking it literally.
Absolutely.
I think if people did what you've done, and taken a step back and think, okay, well, I've been told this is the version, let's look at it how it could be interpreted other ways, then we would see,
yeah,
we might see it change. But it's getting people to want
Get
to do that
it.
Because that,
yeah,
like you said about your mum, they fear that they've been hoodwinked or they've been conned. People don't like to think that they've been hoodwinked, or they just have a huge, just, you know, tunnel vision, and they just cannot, will not consider any other
well,
way.
Because to look off the path that they've been on, that they've been told that they're on, is oh, you know, that's really bad. I can't, you know, I'm going to go to hell if I even question anything, because they're supposed to have faith. So, you know, when I keep saying my mum, obviously I love my mum. She's very Christian.
I love my mum, mate.
but you know, she came on holiday last time, and we were talking, and you know, this, my, you know, my dad gets upset, and he doesn't even want to have the conversation, and he'll leave the room.
Christian,
and,
like, too, right?
Yes, yeah. So, you know, my mum will hear this stuff, and she'll say to me, "Oh, Dad, you're trying to brainwash me." And I'm like, I'm the one who's got it from, like, I'm getting all my information from as many different sources as I can get it from and coming to my own conclusions.
Yeah.
And you're, I don't say this, and you're sitting in a church every Sunday listening to the same person tell you in the information. And half the time I'll give her a quote that Jesus said, and Jesus is the boss of my mum, that's the one she follows.
Yeah.
And I'll give her a quote, and she's like, "Oh, I've never heard that before." And I'm like, "How can you not have heard it? You've been going to church for 70 years. This is the dude who you're following, and I'm following. I mean, I'm following what Jesus said, because I don't consider myself a Christian, but I love what that man said is how you're supposed to live based on all the allegory and in the stories that he told."
Yeah.
So my mum thinks I'm brainwashing her by trying to give her a different opinion. But if she was to actually listen to it, she'd find that she becomes closer to God.
Mm.
Because just from finding out this information that I found out, I'm suddenly like, wow, this is what connecting with God is for me, and that's, you know, that personal. And everyone will say, well, you know, religion's, well, it is, it's personal, but this is what I've found. But I think, you know, taking my mum as an example, is that there's a lot she can't explain, and if you can't explain it, it means you don't understand it, it's not making sense in your head, and you're just going with blind faith. And that's where I want to say, look at this, this is what the meaning is, you know. So if you're you know, worried about the future, if you're gossiping about somebody, if you're jealous about something, you know, if you're 70 years old and you've been going to church for 65 years or however long it is, and you're still experiencing those same emotions and feelings, then you haven't understood what the Christian faith is supposed to be about. So therefore you look, and I look and I think, what, you know, I want you to see what it is, because your life will be better, you'll be so much happier, you won't be worried about what's happening in the future. But you know, so trying to get that information, and I haven't even told you what any of this information is yet, but this is the information that opens up the door to the whole purpose of existence.
Absolutely.
And a lot of people have missed it.
Yeah.
And this is what and this is what, I'll let you in a minute.
That's all right,
and this
mate.
This is what the narrow path is. You know, there's rules set out in the Bible, in the Old Testament and the New Testament. When you scale it back, there's like 8 to 10 rules on how to live your life. And that's what the narrow path is. It says in the Bible, you know, only a few people, I can't quote chapter and verse and who said what in what order, but roughly it says, you know, there's a narrow path that not many people find, and that, you know, the narrow path is hard to find, not many people will find it, but everybody, pretty much everyone, find the wide path. And the wide path is all the shit that everyone normally does, the lower consciousness type stuff.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, it's like you say, the frustrating thing is, you know, that if they did listen, they would be closer to God, because we are gods. We, you know, we have spark
yes.
of God in us, and
yeah.
and part of the huge biggest mind control part of religion is it gets people to look outside themselves for a savior. And
yes, correct.
You know, that is exactly what the system wants, because while we're not realizing our own power, we're giving it away. And when you said that, it really struck a chord with me that religion in its true essence can bring people closer to
yes.
the truth if they didn't take it literally. So it's really interesting. So I just tell us about some of the main stories. So we mentioned the Holy Trinity. So what do you know of the Holy Trinity and when Jesus sacrificed? What are your interpretations of that?
So a lot of this is I've lost track of what is my own brain that's come up with a few things, but most of it is what I've read from other places, and it all seems to have made sense. There was something else I was going to say. I won't go there yet. Yeah. So if you were to ask a Christian, what's the most important thing about being a Christian? What's the most important thing to you about being a Christian? What's the most important thing that ever happened in Christianity? And they'll say, the crucifixion. You know, Jesus was, you know, the Son of God, and God gave his only Son to die so that our sins would be forgiven, and da 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 da. Doesn't make any sense to me whatsoever. It makes absolutely no sense to me. And mate, there might be people listening to this that think that's really bad, but it doesn't make sense to me. And I can put my hand up and say it doesn't make any sense. And the Jehovah's Witnesses will say to me, that was, you know, Adam did the wrong thing, and then Jesus came, and that was the sort of the transaction being closed, and all this sort of stuff. Right? Doesn't make any sense to me. That the important stuff, and I'll get onto the Holy Trinity, my interpretation of the Holy Trinity in a second, but the important stuff is, if you're a Christian, you follow the teachings of the man that was Jesus Christ. So the teachings, the bit that he said whilst he was alive, is to me the important bit. Dying on a cross is not a good thing, but you know, maybe that was astrotheological and it was all based on the sun going down at the winter solstice, etc. But the important bit was what he said while he was alive, and the crucifixion bit to me is not as important, right? But most Christians will forget about a lot of what the teachings were and will just look at the death and the resurrection as the most important thing. And I think that's part of the issue. So rambling again slightly. So the Holy Trinity, right, is, my mum can't explain this to me, mm-hmm. is the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. It doesn't really make any sense what that is. And there's no feminine aspect. Why is the feminine aspect being completely suppressed? Now, everything knows that there's a male and a female, and once a male and a female, you know, come together, then an offspring is created. So the Father, to me, and I'm sure I've read this somewhere, the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Well, it should be the Father, the Spirit, and the Son, right? The Father is supposed to be a representation of the mind. The Mother is supposed to be a representation of the Spirit. And when you bring those two things together, you produce a Christ off a Christ-like offspring. So the Holy Trinity to me is, and it's quite hard to explain, is a description of kind of, I guess what you're aiming for is that you're balancing your left and your right brain, your higher and your lower consciousness, your mind and your spirit, you know, all of those things. You bring them together, and when you balance them, you create the God-like thing, whatever that is. Whether that's, you know, you communicate with God, you become a Christ-like, you have Christ consciousness. So that's, you know, that's what the Father, Son, the Spirit, and the Holy Spirit is to me. And when you look at different things in the Bible, for example, not the Temple of Solomon, Israel, as an example. Am I boring you?
No, mate. It's fascinating. It's fascinating. I'm sitting here with my, you know, completely focused on what you're saying.
So Israel. And again, I'm jumping around backwards and forwards. But Israel is made up of, supposedly, if you subscribe to this idea, Isis, which represents the female,
sure.
Ra, which represents the, and you've probably heard this before, Ra that represents the masculine or the mind. So Isis, female goddess, spirit, Ra, masculine, mind, and El, which in the Bible means of God. So anything that was El was of God, you know, the Elohim, an angel, Gabriel, Michael, you know, Daniel, all these things. It's all sort of a God. So it's effectively saying that you fuse the male and the female aspects, the spirit and the mind, and from that you become like God, or you interact with God, or you become one of God's chosen people. So Israel, it's not supposed to be a geographical border. It's not supposed to be a race of people. It's a state of mind. That's what the story's about.
Wow.
So, and everything that you look at in the Bible is all explaining this.
Of mockery, then, isn't it? The fact that they're using that word,
yes,
in terms of, it's like satanic mockery.
Yeah. Yeah, and this is where the tangents can go in some quite interesting directions. And this is my view, but I like the view, and so I'm sticking with it.
Sure.
The whole thing in the Bible is, it's like a kind of a battle between the physical and the heavenly, you know, the lower consciousness and the higher consciousness. So in the end, if you look at the end game, the end times prophecies, it's all about, at first there will be an antichrist, or there'll be a, you know, if it's, you know, the Kali Yuga, if it's Hinduism, I believe, and all these things, before there's the Christ returns, or before the Jewish Messiah arrives, or before the Satya Yuga arrives for the Hindus, which is the godlike, you know, the humans carrying on in a godlike, compassionate, loving way. There has to be this kind of bad bit first. So there's this battle between the metaphysical and the spiritual and the heavenly versus the physical and the earthly. And the way I see it is that Israel, you know, I'm not a big fan of Zionism. I'm not a big fan of what is Israel. I don't have a problem with Judaism and followers of the Torah, but I don't know enough about it. But I don't, you know, I don't really have a problem with anybody. But Israel, what's happening in the Middle East is a physical manifestation of what is supposed to be an allegorical story about what's going on in the mind. So it's almost like the prophecy is playing out, because the prophecy was sort of written. Oh, I don't even know that makes any sense.
No, it makes perfect sense.
So to me, the Antichrist, which is the bit that comes before the Christ, is a state of consciousness, and a state of, I might be going backwards here, but
no.
The Antichrist is a state of consciousness, but the state of consciousness that the Antichrist is everything that is physical, because it represents the earthly, the physical, the beast, the animal, the lion, the wolf, the, you know, the predator, the lower consciousness, the ego, the carnal mind, right? So therefore, the consciousness manifested is what you get now. It's, you get something like Israel, you know,
it's
taking on a physical
border.
It's cause
and effect, isn't it? Natural law, basically.
Yeah.
In that respect.
Whereas the second coming of Christ is a state of consciousness. I don't believe. It'd be lovely if a man came down in the clouds, but if he did, no one would give a shit. No one would believe it. Everyone would still fucking carry on, you know, going out and getting pissed tonight or whatever it's going to be.
Well, so whether he's got a big game at the weekend, you know, right. Who cares about that?
so as long as he comes after the game, everyone
exactly.
will be sweet.
Exactly.
But what will be manifested with the second coming of Christ is a sort of, it's a metaphysical spiritual thing. It's not going to be a physical thing, if that makes sense. It's all in that, it's in the mind. So like it's almost obvious that the Israel thing is playing out physically, because that's the ultimate in the manifestation of the lower consciousness.
Absolutely.
The manifestation of the higher consciousness will be a loving planet where everyone loves each other and isn't worried about borders and things and materialism and consumerism and greed and money and all that other shit.
Absolutely. And yeah. it's the same with Satanism as well. People take Satanism literally. They think that there's an entity with horns burning in the depths of hell, and when really Satanism is just a way of life, way of being in the world, like you said earlier, ego, all about me, moral relativism.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So people have also taken Satanism literally, and many times when I'm having debates with religious folks, they'll be, yeah, but you quote Satanism a lot, and I'm like, yeah, but that doesn't mean that there's a devil. It means that it's a way of life. It's another religion in and of itself. Allegorical.
Yeah, it's just living. Yeah, it's living completely by the lower consciousness and self-gratification and the ego, and the self is the most important thing. It's the opposite to, the Christ consciousness.
Sure, yeah. And I think that is what the Antichrist is. They say there's a return of the Antichrist. I think the Antichrist is already here, and that is in human consciousness.
Yeah.
So
definitely.
Again, it's been taken literally. People are talking about so and so coming back as the Antichrist. Well, no, it's the state of consciousness that we're at the moment. So, yeah, that was really interesting. So, sorry, was you going to say something, mate?
Yeah, no, I was just going to say, because, and again, I say this when I'm driving around with my wife, making light of the fact that people do conjure demons. Like, I believe that's a real thing, and that's a dangerous thing. But as I say to Louise, if the devil landed on the road in front of me, you know, while we're driving along, and he's got his red skin and his horns and his wings, he's a really evil thing, and he was, you know, yeah, it'd be a bit scary, but at the end of the day, he could just come and get rid of everyone, kill everyone, and that'd be the end of it, you know, no different to getting knocked over by a car. Mm. But it's not it would be the fact that everybody, all the humans, would all worship him and would want to do all the horrible things. So you can get rid of the devil, take him out of it, because you don't even need him in there. Humans are as evil as you can possibly want them to be if they want to be human. Well, they want to be evil, so you don't even need a devil. The devil's alive in people's brains just based on the thoughts where people couldn't give a shit about anyone else other than themselves and what they're going to get out of something. Sorry. Yes.
No, it's all right, mate. So we were just about to touch on crucifixion, on the crucifixion story. So what do you see that? And I'll give you my idea of what it means.
See, it doesn't make a lot of sense to me, the actual story, and I don't know if I'm offending people or care, because I'm a nice person, but it does, you know, it's just a bit of a coincidence that the sun is in its lowest point on the, you know, the 20 whatever of December, and that it rises again on the 25th, you know, and starts its movement up the, you know, whatever, through the, you know, it hits its lowest ebb at the winter solstice and starts to move up, and, you know, that ties in nicely with, you know, it's the sun of God and it's the sun in the sky. So yeah, that could very well be an astrotheological melding of topics, just to kind of, but I don't know enough about it, but to me that part is not as important.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason that it's not as important, even though you probably wanted me to give you some info on it, but I don't have enough info on
I just wanted to hear what your interpretation was.
See, the thing is, right, if you're a Christian, these are the rules that you're told to live by. I've said this in things before and on posts and stuff, but there's, if you scale back all the stories in the Bible, Old Testament and New Testament, because the Old Testament was a set of rules that people took literally, and then Jesus came along and said, you've misinterpreted what this book says, and you should be doing this, and, or, you know, you've misinterpreted that point, what it means is this, and then he wrapped up his own teachings in parables and allegory, but there's 8 rules, right? This is what you're supposed to be doing to live your life. Number 1, live with love at the core of everything you think, say, and do. Number 2, treat everyone with love and kindness no matter their circumstance. Number 3, don't let the ego rule your life. 4, live through spirituality, creativity, and intuition. 5, live in the present without regret of the past or fear of the future. 6, don't judge others. 7, give without expecting to receive and don't tell anyone about it. And 8, you know, don't get hung up on physical wealth and riches and collecting of material possessions, right? Those are the 8 things that essentially the Bible tells you. And I'm sure that's what Hinduism tells you, and I'm sure that's what Buddhism tells you, and all the other things. And Satanism doesn't tell you that. But pretty much all the other ones will tell you those 8 things. So therefore, why are Christians thinking about, you know, what's going to happen to them when they die, and are they going to have everlasting life, and, you know, what's going to happen to do that? As long as they make their peace with God, they're going to end up in heaven. Because Jesus said, don't worry about all that stuff. Just worry about doing the right thing now, in the present, being a good person, and don't worry about what's happening in the future. Don't pack, you know, these are all wrapped up in allegory, but, you know, don't pack a, you know, belongings for the journey, because you don't need it. It's just worry about what choices you're making today, and making sure they're coming from the higher consciousness. And then, you know, surely, if I go to heaven, had this conversation with a Muslim friend of mine the other day, and he was very scared that I was saying these things. If I live by those 8 tenets, and I go and I die, and I go up, and God's standing there, and I say, can I come into wherever, you know, you are? And he says, oh, you did all those really good things, Dale, but you didn't do it in Jesus' name. You didn't do it in whatever's name. Or I didn't do it in Allah's name, or whatever it was. And he said, you can't come in. And I said, well, then I don't want to come in then. If that's how petty it is, it sounds ridiculous. Because that what I'm doing is, I'm being a good person. I'm being a nice and loving person. So if you're going to be that petty, I'm not interested. And my Muslim friend said to me, oh, Dave, you've got to be careful, you know, what you're saying. Yeah. I said, look, I'll take my chances. But I'm pretty sure that when I get there, the bloke's going to say, Dale, you know what, you did a good job. If Jesus came down today, I'm pretty sure he'd say to me, well done, Dale, you're doing a good job, mate, you're being nice to everyone, this is exactly what I wanted you to do, you know, you're being kind and generous and compassionate, and you're putting yourself as last as you can, you're doing a good job, well done, pat on the back for Dale. That's what I believe. And if he doesn't say that, well, how mental is that?
But this is another issue I have with it all. A lot of the time it doesn't even make logical sense. Like, for example, you know, what kind of God wants people to worship him? I mean, you imagine a God to be wise, and, you know, who is this narcissistic God that makes people get up at 4 a.m. and pray? You know, he must be, or whatever it is, must be really insecure to be and quite needy to be worshipped so much by the very thing that it apparently created. So I find that and some of the words used, I mean, submit, you hear this word all the time, submit. I mean, that's what the government asks us to do.
But that's also because the God thing is being misinterpreted. Mm-hmm. So it's you're supposed to be submitting to your higher consciousness. So you're supposed to be, and you're supposed to be submitting to the universe and letting it look after you. That's the whole, you know, live in the present, don't worry about the future. So therefore, just let the universe or God or the divine matrix or the source, whatever you want to call it, you know, just carry you along. That's I think. And as it says in the Bible, God is love. Well, everyone interprets, well, most people that go to church interpret that as the God thing, the man in the sky with the beard and the beard and the long hair,
who's watching everything you do.
Yeah, but he's a loving God, and he does love you, and he wants you to love him back. It's like, no, I don't believe that. I believe that what God is loveness. If God is love, that means love is God. So the essence of love is what God is. So if you want to tap into the loving bit of God, then you have to live by the rules of the higher consciousness, which are those 8 things. That's the narrow path. If you want to see what so in the Bible it says, I'm repeating myself from other things that I've said before, but this, you know, God is supposed to be a loving God and a vengeful God. It's supposed to be responsible for all the good and all the evil. So therefore, God is a force that does, you know, extremes on both ends. And what I've understood is that if you live, and this is the teachings of the man that was Jesus, if you live by the higher consciousness, or by the narrow path, by trying to be selfless, of service to others and kind, generous and all that sort of stuff, then the universe will help you. That's when life becomes good and everything works nicely.
Karma, exactly.
And if you live by the lower consciousness, where you're just satisfying your own ego and you're getting cross and jealous and da 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 da, then you experience the vengeful part of God, and that will be unsatisfied with life, unhappy, maybe unhealthy. That you're not getting enough out of life, you're never content, just problems. So that's what I believe is how the divine matrix or God works, and it is karma. When you look in the Bible and it says an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth, everyone takes that as revenge. Mm. If someone does the wrong thing to me, I'm going to go and stab them. No, it means if you put bad shit out into the universe, that's what you're going to attract back. So put good out, always put good out, and you attract good back, and you attract a good life back. And the worse, the harder your situation is, the more you have to let the universe look after you. Because you might, I'm not going to be able to pay the bills, and now I'm starting to worry. And that's when you have to really let go and not panic. Because as soon as you start to panic, then you're attracting back into your life that feeling that you've got. I'm talking bollocks.
You're coming up with some amazing stuff, and I agree totally. It's all about, ultimately, very simply, cause and effect, karma, natural law, whatever you want to call it. As you said, what you put out comes back. And I've seen it in my own life, I mean I've never been a bad person, but there was times where I kind of thought more about myself. I wasn't really interested too much about what was going on around the world. And when you so quote unquote wake up, or whatever you want to call it, you start thinking, wow, I need to change my ways and move in line with goodness and truth. Then your world changes and things. I'm still not free of problems, but I have less problems than what I used to, fully understanding this universal law. And that's the underlying message of Jesus, basically, wasn't it?
Yeah, 100%. But it's also the underlying message in the Old Testament as well, which is obviously the bit that was before Jesus. And so if you're interested as well, and just quickly, the bloodline thing, right?
Sorry,
the bloodline of Adam
for a bit
thing.
Longer.
So, what you find, if you, it's almost like you have to look at the Bible from a high visibility perspective. You almost don't want to get too bogged down in too much detail, because you can't see the full picture if you're too close to every word. So, when you look at the bloodline, whatever, in the Old Testament, the bloodline that kind of keeps that keeps going. So, Cain and Abel. If you go through I can't get it in the right order, but Cain and Abel and Seth and Enoch and Noah and Shem and Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, Moses, etc. So these are all stories about, if you subscribe to this, these are all stories about the higher consciousness. So, you'll always find a story that is, the Adam's and Eve's sons, and where were the women anyway? Adam and Eve's sons, Cain and Abel. Cain was the sort of earthly, blokey, hairy man, tiller of the land, and Abel was the shepherd, meek, humble, softer person. They represent the lower and the higher consciousness. And Cain kills Abel, so presumably that means I can't give you loads of stuff here because I've not looked at it enough, but Adam and Eve's offspring are, the higher and lower consciousness, and the lower consciousness defeats the higher consciousness. Is that why effectively Adam and Eve are kicked out of the Garden of Eden? Is that what it's supposed to be representing?
The apple, isn't it? And we have the corporation today, Apple, with the bite taken out of the apple.
Yeah, there's loads there's I've got a whole nother tangent on the logos and you know, what's the beast and 666 and all that sort of stuff. But you, yeah, all the things in the Bible, as an example, the Garden of Eden was in the east, the star was in the east, the wise men came from the east, but they followed the star that was in the east. It's east. So all of these stories are representations of the lower and the higher consciousness. So if you look at Cain and Abel, Jacob and Esau, Egypt and Israel, and so on, David and Goliath, etc. It's all saying about the relationship between the left and the right brain, the lower consciousness and the higher consciousness. So stories in the Bible, things where you hear in the Bible Cain or Esau or Egypt or Goliath, or references to the west or the sun or the wolf or the lion or the tiller of the land, or anything that's earthly or beastly or masculine, that's the lower consciousness. And then when you hear things like Abel, Jacob, Israel, David, the east, the moon, sheep or lamb or shepherd or anything that's heavenly or feminine, that's the higher consciousness. So when you get a story of David versus Goliath, that is, you know, that's the spirit versus the ego and the lower mind. You know, the lower mind is always depicted as the hairy, animalistic, big, you know, aggressive thing, which is what it is. That's exactly what the lower consciousness is. It's the ego, the carnal mind, and everything that's responsible for logic and numbers and mathematics and all that kind of physical stuff. And then the right brain, which is obviously your intuition, creativity, spirituality, appreciation of music, etc., is the metaphysical, non-earthly, the heavenly, feminine side. So all these stories are representing that. And you can see, when you skip to the end, this might be a good little ending bit, but when you skip to the end of religions, people are all waiting for something to happen. So if you take Judaism as an example, in Judaism they're still waiting for their Messiah to arrive, because they don't believe that Jesus was the Messiah. So they're waiting for their Messiah to arrive. Before the Messiah will arrive for the Jews, Israel, the state of Israel, has to be created, Jews have to return to Israel, and the Temple of Solomon has to be rebuilt. But that is, and they're doing that literally, that's what's happening. You know, they're building real shit. Mm-hmm. They're making real, but all the woes in the Middle East are all because this is what they're trying to expand. But allegorically, what that means is the world will change, the higher consciousness will happen, you know, the coming of the Messiah, which is a consciousness, will happen once the state of Israel has been created. And as we said before, Israel is, you know, Isis, it's the spirit Isis, goddess, mm-hmm. female, Ra, the masculine sun god mind. You know, once that's been created, the godness is there, El, Israel. So when you've created the state of Israel inside yourself, which is balancing your spirit and your mind, and created a godlike environment, that's when, clearly, obviously, that's when the Christ consciousness will come. Once everyone's fucking realized that's what's supposed to be going on, that's when the world will be a nice place. Mm-hmm. When the Jews have returned to Israel, well, a Jew in the Bible is a literal bloodline, but if the whole of the Bible is allegorical, then it's referring to what's going on in your mind. So a Jew, to me, is an allegorical representation for anybody who has aligned they've created the Israel inside themselves, and they are now a Jew. So they're now a chosen person of God. God wouldn't choose a race to be, you know, why would the God of love choose a physical race or bloodline or whatever, as someone who's better than anyone else? No, he wouldn't. He would just say, if you have aligned yourself so that you've got a, you know, Israel within yourself, then you are a chosen person of me. You're now, you know, you've now found God. So that's what Jew is. And the Temple of Solomon, which has to be rebuilt before the Messiah, Jewish Messiah, arrives, Sol and Mon, sun and moon, masculine and feminine, the Temple of Solomon. In other words, when your masculine and feminine have been created, when you've created the temple, which is also another name for your head, above your ears, yeah. The Temple of Solomon, the sun and moon, when you've balanced, it's all about what's going on in your head.
Mm-hmm. It's all about consciousness, isn't it?
It's all about consciousness. It's all about consciousness, for God's sake, people.
That's it. And I often think, if you just replace the name Jesus with truth, and I'm going to read you a quote, actually, and if you just replace you know, just replace it with truth. It says it's from Matthew 10:34-39 in the Bible.
Look at you go with your quotes in the Bible.
So this completely relates to truth to me and what's going on. So do not suppose that I have come to bring peace to earth. I did not come to bring peace, but a sword. For I have come to turn a man against his father, a daughter against her mother, a daughter-in-law against her mother-in-law. A man's enemies will be the members of his own household. Anyone who loves his father or mother more than me is not worthy of me. And anyone who does not take his cross and follow me is not worthy of me. Whoever finds his life will lose it, and whoever loses his life for my sake will find it. And I think that is truth.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And it's true. It's what's going on. You know, how many people do we upset when we're talking truth? I mean, it's so apt for the time that we're living in. People lose friends, they fall out with family members to try and get the word out. And I think this is what Jesus was saying. You know, that's the kind of sacrifice, and that's why he's, you know, you have to sacrifice yourself for truth. You have to sacrifice certain behaviours that you were perhaps doing. It's about sacrifice.
Yes, but as long as the way that one is conducting themselves when they're doing that is from a place of love and compassion and understanding, and with their ego left at the door, because that's how you unite with people rather than push them away. But you know, you did right. Absolutely. But it's like the messages in the Bible are just fucking be nice to everybody. Be nice to everybody. Yeah, everybody. I mean, just fucking be nice to everybody, and the world will be a better place. And it's in the book.
Yeah, I mean, there's a great meme out there, and I'm going to say it. You don't mind swearing, but some of the people listening might, but I don't care. You know, just there's this meme that went round. I'll have to find it. I'll post it to you. It basically had this book, and on the front it just said, "Don't be a cunt."
religion
in a nutshell. Don't be a cunt. So
that's it.
I think that's the perfect place to wrap finish. It up, mate. And you know, it's just complete allegorical. And mate, what you said was absolutely fascinating. I've learned so much from your insights and research. So just repeat your website, what your plans are, how we can support that for you, and
wicked, yeah.
Anything else that you're doing that you might, you know, you've got a lot to say for yourself, mate. I think you should do more of this kind of stuff.
Yeah, I just find it fascinating and really enjoy it. But the website is www.waking.world, and it's basically two things. Firstly, it's because I want to find it's a sort of a place where you basically can just register. I don't want your names. I just want to see where around the world are people, how many people are of a similar mind to me. That's the first thing. And it's not to make money. I will never make money out of it. I think you'll probably get an idea of the type of person I am based on this conversation. And then the other bit is a library of it. Pretty much it's just got almost every person that I've researched across every different topic, which I find really fascinating, for everything from past lives to esotericism to the occult to all kinds of different bits and bobs. It's really, really interesting, and most people would probably like it. I just need everyone to, you know, to, I don't know, get into it, have a look around, pass it on to other people. I want to change the world, but I can't change the world on my own. Neither can you, Tony. Everyone needs to sort of get on the bandwagon and start helping each other out.
That's it. So yeah, anyone listening, have a look at the website, and I'm sure we'll be hearing more from you, mate. Thanks so much for coming on. Very,
thanks,
very
Tony.
Interesting. And, it's okay.
God,
don't worry.
Hang on, turn that off.
We're not professional on this podcast, so don't worry about it. <phone. laughs>
That's been good. I've really enjoyed it. I was a little bit unsure as to how that was going to go, but once I got rolling, the gabbling sort of started to make sense.
You say you were gabbling. Trust me, you weren't, and I'm sure my listeners will agree that you weren't. Sometimes it can feel like that because, you know, we've got a lot that we want to say, and you know, I know when I go on these things, it's like bleh, it just all comes out, but it all comes out in the right way, in the right synchronicity, and I just found a lot of it so fascinating. And you know, in many ways, I've got a new respect for these books, and I'm gonna start having a look at the the hidden messages, which there are many. So thanks again,
Perfect.
Mate, and we'll catch up again soon. We'll have another one of these.
Thanks, Tony. Then. Perfect. Okay, mate. Thanks, mate. I've thoroughly enjoyed it. Good on you.
All right, mate. Bye.
Take care. All right, mate. See